Are you stuck at home in lockdown? Yeah, I know, we all are. Don't worry, we've got you covered, because it's time once again for Live at Night with Pete Ferrero, where whatever happens, happens. Now along with his special guests, here is your host, Pete Ferrero.
Okay, we are live at night. We didn't do this the other day because we had a lot of technical glitches, but we are here. It is me and Art Sutley. Now, Art, I have to hear your story about how you actually met me. We met at a wedding, Jade and Daryl's wedding, but you have a different approach on how we met, and I didn't even realize this. So why don't you tell us?
So absolute awesome wedding, right? I think we can agree on one thing. Going out to Puerto Rico to a small island and celebrating like with that many people was amazing. And so when we got to the hotel, I ended up getting one of those rooms that were it was right by the pool. And you don't enter from inside the hotel, right? The outdoor doors
right.
You go out.
Yes, because we were poolside rooms, I
correct.
Think. Right,
and,
yes.
And they all look the same, you know, after a couple like Mai Tais and a couple other things, you know, I'm walking around and I swing open the door thinking I'm walking into my room.
Right.
Now, I don't know you. I walk in and it's you, another guy, a bunch of camera equipment, and a girl sitting on the bed. And I'm
that's
like,
right.
I'm so sorry. So I walk out, I go tell the whole wedding party, I'm like, there's an adult film being filmed two rooms down from mine. And it wasn't until after that we started going to the wedding events, I realized you guys were there and actually
for the wedding.
Filming for the wedding. So
right.
I'm like telling the bride and groom, I'm like, those guys over there, I'm like, I thought there was a porn being filmed at the W Hotel.
I love it, man. But that
It was crazy.
Yeah. And Jade and Daryl are such a great couple. That was an awesome wedding. And I think Sophie was the photographer, Sophie Matthewson.
Correct.
So that's probably who you thought was the adult film actress.
And honestly, like, we kept in touch after that. I mean, that had to be like 6 or 7 years ago.
I think so. Yeah. Jade is great. Jade is at Maritime Park these days, I believe. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And, you know, obviously, places like that, any type of wedding venues, things like that, having a tough time right now. It's just,
Man, absolutely. Before we get into how the industry's being affected, how about you personally? How are you? First of all, what are you drinking, by the way, since this is a drink show?
So do you have a beer or a cocktail on your
today,
side?
Today, right now, I'm just drinking a glass of Pinot Noir. It's a, I don't even know. I have to look at the bottle. Yeah, I got it. It's a California wine. Yeah.
So I am actually drinking a Boulevardier, which is like a step cousin or a long lost cousin to the Negroni. So it is Campari sweet vermouth, but bourbon instead of gin. And you can either use a bourbon or you can use like a rye whiskey. If you're using a rye whiskey, you'll do 1 ounce. If you do a bourbon, you can bump it up a little bit to like 1.5 ounces since there's a little softer push. This bourbon that I actually am using is phenomenal. It's called the Burning Chair. And since you're drinking wine, this is kind of an interesting connection. It's Dave Finney, who's the guy who created the Prisoner wine. And 8 years in the desert and Lucene. So he actually got into the spirit game. So he's doing bourbons and ryes, and he's doing them at a Mare Island, which is outside of Napa and outside of San Fran.
Nice.
And it's an old naval base, and he's got the coolest distillery I have. I mean, I go out there like 3 times a year. It's like my little playground.
Nice.
And it's a go-to for me.
But what about you personally? How has this affected your life, the virus and whatnot? Are you able, I know you like to work out and all this stuff. How much is that being affected?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, and you probably saw on my social media. So the Wall Street Journal, while I'm not used to talking about me personally in the press, this was the first time out of probably 24 Wall Street Journal stories I've been featured in that was solely about like not the restaurant industry and about something I was doing. And it's tough. I've been utilizing a parking garage.
Interesting.
Which is near my building. It's actually basically attached to my condo building. And not a lot of people are driving right now. You don't have to touch any handles. I walk out my door. I run in this parking garage. I actually run up and down the ramps and I do circuit training in the garage. And
that's incredible.
Thank God, because I'm a guy who's used to being on the go. I mean, I'm at 28 trade shows a year, speaking, appearing, exhibiting. I'm not used to being still.
Do you feel trapped? I feel very trapped. I'm someone that's a social butterfly. I like to go to bars. I like to go to restaurants. I like to take meetings. Even when I'm out, don't want a meeting, I like to do another meeting. You know what I mean? I feel a little trapped now.
I definitely feel trapped, and it's even worse for me because I'm seeing what my industry is going through and I feel completely helpless. That's why people say, oh, working from home is great. You know, you get up, you can work out, you work from like 9 till 5. I work from like 9 till 11 PM.
Nice. Yeah.
Sometimes I'm up at 6 and I'm doing the same thing because I'm trying to take calls. I'm taking emails from struggling bar owner operators, nightclub owners, just kind of asking questions on what to do. I mean, the magazine's read, Bar Business Magazine's read by, you know, over 90,000, food and beverage directors, bartenders, managers, owner operators, anything from restaurants all the way to nightclubs. And right now, a lot of them, you know, took it on the teeth. So
yeah, man. You know, so I want to get into that.
I do feel helpless. I feel like I'm kind of like trapped here.
Same. Yeah.
And all I want to do is be on stage and teaching people how to elevate their cocktail list, make more money, be successful, support their family, employ people. And I just feel like I'm stuck in this condo, like,
feel like for me too, like I'm doing the stuff I normally do, making this happen, calling that one, talking to this one, but everything is sort of like in that, I don't know, suspended animation, right? So it's like, okay, we're gonna do that. When? I don't know. Right?
I mean, listen, we have so many trade shows have canceled. I mean, right now, I stepped off the stage at the International New York restaurant show. And it's at the Javits Center. And it was just bizarre for me because...
Wait, when was this? What date was this?
This was both myself, Mia Mastriani, and Phil Wills from Bar Rescue spoke on March 9th, I believe. So...
Dude, that is right in the... The shitstorm is coming your way. Yes.
Hello. So we got off stage and it was, you know, I went back to my booth. Mia went to the airport because she was going to film an episode of Bar Rescue. Phil was heading somewhere else. Soon as my phone starts blowing up, I start getting text messages like, this event just called, canceled, you know, your appearance because the whole show is not happening. The trade show is not happening. And that's when I knew. When a small show canceled, something that was more of like one-on-one buyer meetings, maybe 150 people. When that one canceled, I'm like, well, the one that's 35,000
has to cancel.
Canceling.
Right.
And it's continued to go. And there are some shows that are in June still not canceled, but you know, I'm optimistic.
Yeah, it's tough, man. No way. And what my indicator from film was when the South by Southwest canceled. When a festival canceled, I was like, oh shit, this might really be a real thing. But then the virus was sort of chasing you as you went city to city, you were telling me.
Yeah. So I started in mid-February. I went out to St. Martin. I'm actually really glad I did that. That was my 40th birthday. I was actually with Daryl from the wedding.
Yeah.
So I you know, we celebrated early because March, I usually have a gauntlet of trade shows that I'm speaking at. So I was like, guys, we're going to do something for my 40th. We got to do it in February. So I did it and I basically left St. Martin and landed in Florida for one night in Miami. And then I started flying to California. When I landed
let's talk about your 40th birthday party. We can't just move off of this. Yeah. What is that like for you? I'm sure this is a big birthday. There's a lot of drinking, right? I'm sure. What are you bringing with you? Tell me about the trip itself. And you said Daryl was there?
So Daryl was there. So we go to St. Martin every year. It's kind of like our guys trip. And we just kind of throw in something for somebody's 50th, somebody's 40th. So
sure.
We always go year, so it was kind of my year. It was like, okay, who's got the next big thing? And I was like, well, I'm turning 40 and not happy about it, but
right, I turned a few years ago, I wasn't happy either. I went in kicking and screaming.
So we rent a villa every year in St. Martin. We have a lot of really great friends on the island, and it's opposite for, you know, going to Vegas and everything. I mean, that's work for me, you know, so
right.
I try to do the opposite. I want to
chill. I want to relax.
I want to have some cocktails with my friends.
Yeah,
I don't need girls dropping champagne out of the ceiling, spinning down while Tiesto's playing. I get that. Like, that's on the regular for
that's Tuesday night. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So we did that. Had, you know, it was five of us out there. Great trip. Kind of all split and went our different ways. I landed in Miami in order to fly to a trade show in California, in San Diego. Went to that show. Soon as I got to that show, I heard that there were a couple cases in St. Martin. And I was like, oh, man, like perfect timing on getting in and out of that. Then I land in San Diego, and then everyone starts talking about, oh, California's got all this stuff.
Closed.
So I go from San Diego, I fly to San Fran because I'm working on building a restaurant bar out in Napa, out that way. So I was like consulting on that project. So I stopped there. Everyone's talking about San Diego has a bunch of cases. I leave San Francisco. I go to Seattle.
Wow.
And I'm like, man, good thing I got out of San Fran. I land in Seattle. Soon as I get off the phone, I get all these text messages like, be careful. They just reported like 10 people dead in Seattle. And I'm like, oh my God,
man.
This is getting so serious. So I stayed for Seattle Cocktail Week, which was 2 days. I never left the hotel. That's the first time I've ever gone to a city where I've gone to all of the seminars and events, did what I had to do, dined within the hotel, never went out.
It's crazy.
Never went out, saw any of my friends, got on the plane, flew back to New York.
Yeah.
And ended up doing that trade show. And as soon as I walked off the stage at that trade show, I knew it was going to be a real tough road ahead.
Yeah. Now, went back to the party, your 40th party. I wanted to ask you, is it tough for you, and not just at your party, but is it tough for you when you go to places and they make a cocktail? I saw you on Bar Rescue. I'm going to ask you about that later. But is it tough when you go to you're hanging out at this bar, whatever, and you're like, fuck, did the fucking drink, they fucked it all up. Is it constant? Is it a constant push and pull with you? Or are you able to just say, hey, I'm away. I'm just going to enjoy this island breeze or whatever it is. you froze up, Art. We Art froze up. And Diana Boyle is going to join us here too as a pop-up. People are popping in to the show. And so Diana's going to pop in, and I'm hoping that Art comes back. Let's see. We have reached a freeze, a total freeze, but I have Diana Boyle here. Art.
Yes, you do. Hello.
Okay. Art's back. Hey, Art. Okay. So I want to let you finish that question, but Diana Boyle has joined us, and she is from a distillery. She's going to pop in. I told you that this might happen. People pop in now. So she's going to talk.
Sorry. We lost you a little connection there.
Yeah, that's okay.
I guess you were asking,
is it hard for you to drink? Yeah. There's Diana. No. Yeah. Diana, Art, Diana. Yeah.
Hello.
So hard for me to drink? No. I mean, I turn my brain off a little bit. I can go out and just do it more from a social standpoint.
Right.
You have to really like trash the drink for me to be like, whoa. I mean, other than that, I go out and I just hang out. If I'm on work mode and somebody's asking me to like test their cocktail program, yeah, I mean, I'm on it. But for the most part, you got to turn your brain off or else it really messes you up.
Has there ever been a moment where you're like, this is not it. This is not where like, because I feel like if you turn your brain off and you identify that the drink is bad, it must be really bad.
Yes, exactly. But I have a moment that I tell this story. I just actually told this story at that last trade show I was speaking at. So I was at a bar, which happened to be a national account. Rarely do I, I'll try to step into independence and support them, but I went into a national account. I was sitting where I normally sit, which is corner of the bar, because I love watching people jump in. I like watching them kind of do their thing behind the bar. That theatrics is what I love about this industry. And waitress comes up over my shoulder, asks the bartender, and she says, do we have Bombay Sapphire? And the bartender goes, no, we don't have that whiskey. And I was like, whoa, sweetheart. Oh, come back. She's like, what? I'm like, that's gin. Do not tell your customer that you don't have that whiskey. You do not have that gin because it's a blue bottle and I don't see it back there. And the bartender was like, oh man, I can't believe I said that. Like,
you turned into a first responder almost in a way.
Correct. But the weird part
In a different way.
I was dining by the hotel where everyone from the trade show was. So 20 minutes later, people come in and they're screaming across the bar. They're like, hey, you're the guy who's doing the keynote on the cocktails.
Right.
And I watch the bartender just be like, fuck. Like, that was not a regular customer and he's part of the industry. And she's right. Like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, it's totally okay. So it happens, you know, stuff happens.
Totally. Now, Diana, why don't you introduce where you're from? And then I'm going to ask you that same question.
Sure. Because I kind of came in, but I got the gist of the question a little bit. But so my name is Diana Boyle, and I am currently working for Spring 44 Distilling, which is in Loveland, Colorado. But I am based in the New Jersey, New York market. So currently in North Jersey. So I'm in the hub of it all right now. Mm-hmm. So it's a little crazy up here. Just trying to stay put, as much as I can. But so I've been with Spring 44. Oh my goodness. It'll be 3 years next month. Previously I was with,
are you aware of the brand Art Spring 44?
I don't know that. I don't know that brand, but I definitely want to.
Right. There you
go. It's a great brand. So I'll just give you a kind of a brief,
a and little keep bit it about brief, the company. Because there's no plugs here. Yeah.
I was previously with Heaven Hill Brands, which was really big whiskey company, primarily whiskey, a little bit of everything, to be honest with you, in your portfolio. But and then since kind of went from the big guys to more of a craft distiller.
Sure.
That was something that I made a decision on just because I really wanted to kind of get with the company from the bottom up and grow with them.
Yeah.
Their message to me just spoke to me. I flew out to Colorado. I went to the spring. And as soon as I met, you know, one of the owners and saw what they were doing out there, I was just completely in love with the brand. So it's all about the water and things like that. But yeah, so craft company out of Loveland, Colorado, nice. Which is about 45 minutes outside of Denver.
Now let me ask you, how has your life been affected by this, by the coronavirus in terms of your work? Are you still working or are you what has happened?
So it's a little different for everybody depending on what brand or I would say the caliber of their brand, right? So brand recognition and so on and so forth, distribution. Since we are so small, we have, you know, 5 full-time employees across the country. So we're kind of all hands on deck at this point, just more so in a brainstorming kind of aspect and just trying to come up with ways to generate revenue. Specifically in my market, so I apologize if my dog.
It's okay. Dogs are legal.
Mine's sleeping right now and he's being really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If a doorbell or something rings, the whole show's done.
So obviously we know like bars, restaurants, all that stuff has been closed down. We do have liquor stores open up here, which has helped a lot of brands that have retail distribution. For us being such a small brand, we don't have a ton. So really our driving revenue source for this market is my bars, my restaurants, you know, things like that. So, you know, come up with ways that we can continuously generate revenue at this time while also doing our part to help wherever we can, right?
Well,
so
listen,
that's kind of the challenge.
You're in an awesome situation because you're talking to the man who created Bar Biz Magazine, right? So can you give some advice to the distillery on what they can be doing now that the bars, and we're going to jump deeper into this art, but now that the bars are sort of having some trouble, what kind of advice would you have with that?
Yeah, I mean, so if your bread and butter is the bar industry, a lot of them are struggling right now with liquor sales are through the roof when it's off premise right now. I mean, the trajectory is like ridiculous. So what I think what they can do is actually help their on-premise locations better market themselves. So some of the things that we've been seeing in the industry is some of the smart bar owners are like, okay, wait a minute. Most people aren't used to our location as a to-go place. Like I go to my local bar, I sit down and that's where I have a cocktail. I don't picture it the place I'm going to go swing by, have a cocktail and take it to go. So one of the things that a lot of savvy bar owners have done is call themselves a temporary liquor store. And they've actually been selling the bottles with all the ingredients and a recipe card. So they're moving through inventory, but they're just changing, they're pivoting on what the consumer views them as. If they're comfortable right now in this market, if they're comfortable with running to a liquor store and buying, then you should turn yourself into a temporary liquor store. Because what happened 8 to 12 months from now, we would have been in a better position for cocktail delivery. I mean, that seminar, Pete, we were talking about, I was at in San Diego, 3 hours, I sat down with national accounts talking about how they were working to get states signing on board to do cocktails to go takeout. And we just weren't there yet. And all of a sudden this happened and every state in a heartbeat said, cocktails to go, do whatever you can to save your business. And that became a big problem. We weren't set up for that. So a lot of, even some restaurants are calling themselves grocery stores and they're actually selling their inventory as if they're a grocery store. So you got to do what you have to do to change it. So maybe distilleries can partner with these on-premise locations. I think it's win-win, right? You're helping the location strive to make money to bridge the gap till we can reopen. Mm-hmm. And also they're remembering it's your brand giving them the idea. So the special they're going to do is with your spirit brand.
Right. Nice. So just to kind of tack onto that, it is something that is, we have been doing, people are doing it. It's, I had two other calls today, just with different suppliers. You know, we're all trying to, you know, brainstorm together and really just get together as a, you know, a whole hospitality community and really try to, you know, leverage everybody's ideas and things like that. So we are doing it. It's, the people that are doing it are doing it well. We're helping them out, you know, whether it be with, bottling, with labels, with wherever we can, you know, just getting ideas and things like that. It's a little difficult because there still is some logistics and things that go into it and some legalities that people are a little concerned about. So just, you know, kind of navigating all of that red tape has been a challenge, but it is definitely something that, you know, we're all doing. We've been trying to, whether it be getting some of your buyers together and do like a fun happy hour that everybody can just feel good about, whether you do it in like a, you bring a comedian on, you bring a band on, you know, just ways to kind of make it feel like we're still all together. So the cocktail to go thing is definitely, it's definitely out there. People are doing it. They're doing it where it could be picked up or delivered. You know, that's one of the options as well. And in all different ways, right? So it's definitely something that has been out
there. Art, what is, jump into this with me. What is the issues and solutions to some of the things that are going on? What are the biggest things that you're hearing from bar owners right now? I mean, listen, man, a couple months ago now, I guess, life was great. People were doing, bars were doing good or they weren't doing good, but it was based on the fact whether or not they're, what they can do internally inside the bar. Right. Now they get,
being, if you played it right, you were being successful. You
didn't on your, have like on your own outside. Merit. Right.
Correct.
Now this virus comes into play and there is literally nothing that can stop it, right? I'm sure initially everybody's trying to think of what they can do quickly and then it becomes worse and worse and worse. So for you, what are you seeing the most of in your way and what kind of things are you walking through?
Yeah, I mean, it's a struggle right now. We all know it's like it's a short-term beatdown right now because we're just waiting to get reopened. We're going to open in a different fashion. I mean, an establishment that had an occupancy of 200 is not going to come right out of the gate and states are going to say, great, have 200 people sitting. They're going to want to separate people for a specific period of time, short period of time. The most savvy ones are getting ready for that right now. So while they're taking a beat down on revenue and trying to make as much as they can to keep the doors open and moving forward, the smartest ones are the ones contacting me and saying, hey, I got this for the next month and a half, 2 months, but what should we be doing to prepare for the new landscape of what restaurant dining is going to be? And how do we make our customers feel comfortable?
Yeah.
One of the biggest challenges right now is you better start figuring out what your voice is to make the new customer comfortable, because there's a new customer out there and it's all of us.
Right.
And we're going to all want something different. And we're going to want to know that we're safe when we're going out. So, you know, it's been difficult. You know, I loved when you get the stories from the magazine, when the industry was great and everyone was saying, hey, I read that article or I listened to your seminar and I did it. And I increased my beverage program in 3 months and I increased it by 15%. Now all I'm getting is very little positive. Some people like putting together some good programs to get through this time. But for the most part, it's really a lot of negative, and it's a lot of, you know, dangerous times for people. I've always said in my seminars that you should have 3 months of cash on hand as a restaurant or bar owner and no sales come in. When you have that money sitting in the bank, you could weather a storm like this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that is not what people do.
Now, Art, you've seen storms before. I mean, literal storms, right? I mean, you know, not right. this is a slightly different storm because it's a nationwide one, right? But you've seen, you know, Hurricane Sandy come through the East Coast. Correct. And other places, right?
Correct.
And so how similar is this to that, or is it not even
so
measurable?
So when a hurricane or something like that comes through, right, that's an area getting hit by into a brick wall, right? And it's fast and it's hard. And all of a sudden, sometimes there's no locations. There's not even a foundation of a location. So it's like the rebuilding time. This is different. This is like a speed bump, right? It's slowing us down, but it's one of those like really annoying speed bumps. That's not like a quick one. It's like the one you got to like really drive over. That's what we're going through right now. So it's temporary. But yeah. The problem is that was a very centralized location when things happened to a certain area. This was completely nationwide. And we've never seen anything like this. And it was scary for a lot of, you know, restaurant and bar owners. I think they're starting to see some of the light. But like I have guys in Texas emailing me and they're like, hey, you know, I know you're based in North Jersey and New York. What you guys are going through, we're not going through right now. But should I be ready for something like that and be closed longer than everybody in New York and New Jersey? And we just don't have the answer to that question.
Yeah, man. How about you, Diana? I want to, just for the fun question, do you have that problem when you go to a bar and because you're around this so often and someone makes you drink, are you like, oh God, what's your take on that one?
I think I kind of came in a little bit when you were saying this, but I feel like my problem is I'm always on when I'm in a bar. So I'm always looking at the back bar. I'm always seeing what they have. I'm looking at their cocktail list. I'm looking at, you know, now I'm looking at their wine list, and now, I'm always looking at that more so than just going in and being like, I'm always business first.
Yeah.
I think is what it's hard to turn that off.
How do you turn that off, Art?
It took a long time. I mean, I've been doing this. I mean, I've worked in this industry since I was 16, but being the publisher of this magazine, it's been 13 years. So it took a long time for me to turn it off. I mean, think about it. I would be like, I'd be out on a date, right? And I tell the people what I do and they're like, were you paying attention to me or looking what the bartender's doing? I'm like, no, I'm all here. But in the beginning I was all over here, you know? So it was hard.
I love that.
Yeah. So you're secretly looking at what they're ordering. I don't know.
My favorite was this young lady who was like, three things wrong, like mid conversation. She's like, three things wrong with this bar right now. And I was like, okay, boom, boom, boom. She goes, paying attention to me. I'm like, damn. I was kind of caught my eye real quick.
Oh, that's funny. That's very funny.
So I definitely agree with that. I mean, you do get a little, sometimes you got to take yourself down to earth a little bit with that kind of stuff too. I think you get into this, especially in New York. You get caught up in these amazing cocktail bars and just, I mean, these people are like, you know, scientists. I mean, it's just brilliant what they can do. So you kind of get on this high of what this is, and then you go to a friend's barbecue in Vermont or something, and you get a whole different element, you know, or whatever. Yes. So you kind of have to take yourself back down to earth and realize there's, you know, both sides, and it's all just an amazing side of it. It's just a different side.
Yes.
It's ice that gets me all the time. Ice is like the thing right away. Like, if you're going to charge me $20 for a cocktail and you give me shit ice, anyone that I'm out with is like, oh, Art's going to say, Art's 100%. Dude, my publicist always calls me the ice hole. He's like, about ice.
I think I might start calling you that.
So I'm telling you. I mean, nice.
Or you, your name, ice hole, Art Sutley. You
know what I mean? I literally made these in my house because that's how serious I am about ice.
Oh, geez.
That's about as clear as you can get.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Like, you know, you got to have good ice if you're going to have a good cocktail. Upcharge. Right. That's, you know, the name of the game is make money and make a person feel like when they spent the money that they got exactly what the value or more was for that cocktail.
Of course, of course.
I'm going to tell you, I met Diana at a bar, at an airport bar. That's how we met. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was.
Wait, okay, what airport?
Chicago.
Chicago.
Okay. Yeah. No, I always ask this because I basically live in airports, so we always have conversations. They're like, oh, what airport?
O'Hare Airport.
Yeah.
She happened to.
I was on a layover.
Yes, and we sat next to each other. I may have picked the seat next to her. It was like her or the other dude. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm going to go down this road. she was super cool. And then we got to talking about what she does or whatever. But anyway, so this is the, I'm going there to transition to, where do you like to go? Where is the spot that when you're, Art, you travel all over the place. So when you're, you know, and I know Vegas is probably an obvious answer, but where is that you go, oh my God, I'm getting to fly to blank and I'm going to.
Vegas is not, I mean, I'm there probably 4 times a year, but that is not. That's not a fun spot for me. That's a work spot for me to go to. I mean, that's just like.
So where is the spot where you're like, damn, I'm flying into blank. I cannot wait to hit the bar scene at.
We're talking just U.S. base? Just U.S.?
Yeah, let's stick with the United States because, okay. You know, I don't know if we've expanded.
I'm going to say one of the spots that I have absolutely loved and continually gone to is Austin, Texas.
Nice. Okay. I've heard a lot of good things. Yeah.
I mean.
Going in October.
Nice.
Oh, done. Go to Nickel City. Go to Half Step on Rainy Street. I mean, absolutely amazing bars.
Okay.
And it's like a little bit of everything. It's like live music, dive, and then it's like high-end cocktails, good food, street food. It's like all in one.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about South by Southwest getting canceled. I feel awful for that community. You know what I mean? Because that's where all that is based out of. And I know that film festival is super important to their economy and whatnot. So I'm rooting for that area.
Restaurants would get rented out for the whole week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they exactly.
Basically say, hey, I'm not open to the public. This company rented me out and they're going to be doing
Netflix is here, right?
Correct. For the whole week. And they're doing an event every night. Yeah. So to them, you know, that was something that would cover like 4 months of their rent for the year just by getting rented out in that fashion. So that was a tough hit for them. And I know a lot of people were putting out stuff to support local after that.
Diana, besides Chicago and meeting me, where is it that you say, I can't wait to fly into?
Say bar scene wise, I don't travel as much as I would like. I'll put it that way.
Okay. Chicago. No.
I mean, sure. I actually just went to, so I was on the layover when I had seen you there. I had never actually been to Chicago.
Okay.
Until recently. And I got out
there. Oh, right. That's right. That was a layover. Right.
Yeah, that was a layover. So I actually hadn't been to Chicago until June of this year.
Okay.
And I was actually pretty impressed by, I had one place in mind that I really want. It was a Big Star in Chicago. I really wanted to go there. I heard their margaritas are the best, but I was actually impressed by their cocktail bars as well. So I thought that I did like the city. I thought it was manageable. Like New York's, there's nothing like it, right? But it's huge. And I think Chicago is more manageable for people, especially visiting, to really kind of figure out the neighborhoods and things like that. And this might just because it's my hometown, but Philadelphia.
Nice.
I think has in the past, I don't know, 5-6 years, I'm shocked to what has happened
Mets.
There in the bar scene. Hey. I'm going to show my Philly love right here.
Right, she just immediately dismiss anything to do with Philadelphia. Immediately. Right.
But I do think that is a bar scene that I have, you know, when I was living there, I was kind of like, eh. But seeing what has come about in probably the last 5 or 6 years, I'm pretty impressed there as well.
How about you, Art, in Chicago? Do you like Chicago?
I do. I absolutely love Chicago. I mean, especially coming from like New Jersey, New York area, that's like a real easy flight. You get into a real great
city. Totally.
I think their food and like beverage scene has elevated so much where, I mean, listen, New York was setting the bar for a very, very long time, unchallenged on any of that.
Yeah.
And now I think a lot of these other cities are really pushing, you know, against the whole New York. We used to say, oh, New York or London, who was setting the scene, right? Now it's like other people competing with New York within the U.S. So I think Chicago's top notch. I mean, you can always tell when you see what restaurant groups and stuff go into a city that maybe that's have true. Done something here in New York and you're like, oh, their next city they chose was Chicago. So that just tells you. They're kind of on the beat of what the trend's what's going on with the trend there.
Art, as you know, I moved to LA and I drove cross country and we stopped in Las Vegas.
Yep.
And Las Vegas, we talked a little bit about it as one of the hotbed cities, but it's dead. Nothing is happening in Las Vegas right now. The streets are totally empty. The little ticket guys that are telling you about the strip club to go to, they're not even there. I thought they just came with the street. Yeah, they're not there. So nothing is open. And there's signs everywhere that's like, hey, we're going to be coming back. There's even one of the strip clubs had a sign like, we'll go soon. You know, I was like, wow, they're really... No one's going to see this sign. But anyway, I know you've got connections in Las Vegas. What are you hearing about that marketplace?
Yeah, I mean, listen, a lot of those places have deep pockets, so that's a plus, right? They're not your average owner-operator when you're dealing with people like from Omnia and Tao. I mean, they're huge nightclubs. What the scary part is for them, they're cavernous spaces.
Yeah.
So they're used to functioning full for three nights a week and having a line outside of another 400 people still trying to get in, but they're, you know, they have a capacity of like 3,000 plus people in there. So, you know, it's going to be scary because what are we open towards?
Yeah.
That is not something probably Las Vegas wants right now. They don't want people flying in from Texas and Florida and New Jersey and Pennsylvania and
China.
Maybe,
sorry.
Maybe Iowa. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And now being crammed into a massive nightclub. So that's really going to be a game changer.
Yeah.
For a specific part of time. Do I think that will all come back? 100%. But right now, small and manageable is 100% better coming out of this. Because you can, you know, you can work a little bit more limber, right? If you have a location that's maybe 300 people, you can easily cut that down and manage it. When you're a club that holds 3,000 people, one, or people want to be spending big dollars and have a very open space? Not really.
Yeah. And I want to ask you about how things are going to shift, sort of. You know, you kind of alluded to some of that earlier about maybe smaller spaces and all this stuff. Like, think about the places in the Jersey Shore, DJs and all this stuff. Are people going to be going to DJs this summer? I can't imagine. Like, I don't even know if I want to shake someone's hand. You know, I might not even meet Diana Boyle at the airport anymore. You know what I mean? I'm going to be social distancing.
Wait, I still shake her hand. I just want to go on record.
Yeah, same. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, time's going to tell. I mean, we don't know where we're going to be in July and August. I think things are going to be very different. Yes. Mm-hmm. Do I know if people are going to want to go to DJs or what? How we're going to function? I don't know that far off yet. I can tell you May and June does not look like a good time for that. I mean, I you know, like I was talking about before about the trade shows, is everything's been pretty much buttoned up and canceled. And I'm seeing everything fall in August, September, and October.
Right.
So imagine all the trade shows I've ever had, right? They've all gotten canceled and gone on top of trade shows I already have in those months. So it's going to be a crazy time. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, the landscape's going to look a lot different. I think places that you're used to walking in that were going to be shoulder to shoulder, that's not going to be like that anymore.
Right.
You know, and I think owner operators, you know, one of the things I was talking about was everyone needs to come together and lobby right now, because should this happen, because I don't know if it's going to happen yet. I'm only forecasting from what I know I think our government would do and say.
But it's a fair forecast.
Correct.
Knowing yourself, would you want to be in a large, even going to a wedding or a large group? You know, I mean, at sporting events, concerts. I think you're going to be a year off before some of those big things come back.
Correct. So it's what do we do if that happens? You know, because obviously when we all consult for a place, you're looking at table turns. You're looking at square footage, cost of square footage, how many tabletops you can do. And that's what your business plan is. And that's how you know you can take a certain amount of square footage. Well, what happens when someone says, you know what, your plan is not going to be your plan for the next 6 months, and you're going to have half of that revenue coming in? Well, that throws off the whole entire mathematical equation of why you took that square footage. So what I've been really trying to get a lot of owner operators on board across the US is we need to start telling the states, our local government and state governments, that to-go cocktails has to continue.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can let less people in your restaurant, you might have a really good following. They'll say, you know, I'm going to order it. I'm going to order home. I'm not going to go. I'm not going to
take fuck it. I'm just going to take out. Yeah, they did it before. I'm going to do it now. Right.
So if you can add those cocktails to go orders, that helps bridge the gap. Because now you might be taking a, you know, delivery order that was $45. And now you might be upping it to $65, getting two cocktails on there, or $70 with two cocktails on there. So that's what we really need to be pushing for, is if you're going to take away the space from us, and we're willing to do it for the greater good of keeping people healthy, can you allow us to continue this cocktail delivery system? And so I have a lot of people working on right now little mixology kits with recipe cards, so that you can't offer your whole menu. That's, you're going to kill yourself.
Right.
Pick like four cocktails.
I was going to say, I've been seeing like three or four max.
And do it where you now have something fun for, you know, a person or a couple to actually make their own cocktails and be their own bartender mixologists. And mm-hmm. I think that's what's going to save, you know, it's not going to be the same, but it's going to help cover that gap, that revenue gap.
For both of you. And I think every industry is sort of feeling this, right? There's going to be something that comes out of the coronavirus scare that's almost like a silver lining for their industries, right? So I don't know necessarily with weddings what that would be, because so much of this is so scary in terms of people really literally in weddings don't know when to shift their dates to. I have couples that are March and April that obviously shift it. But then you have May and June that don't know what to do. But then I have October ones shifting to next year because they just don't want to deal with it all this year. So that industry, I don't know necessarily what the silver lining will be. But in your industry, I'm sure maybe one of these programs could potentially be the silver lining to, like, hey, we didn't do it that way for a long time, but this is something that we've now added. Like takeout, for example, for restaurants, right? Maybe a lot of restaurants weren't doing the takeout thing, but now they can add it to them. So what do you got?
And they got slaughtered, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's say, listen, everybody knows we have our like delivery restaurants we go to. We view that one.
Exactly. Yeah.
That one is
jamming.
Delivery.
Yeah.
And maybe you end up there eating because you're on your walk home from a bar, and that's what happens.
Right.
But then you have your dine-ins, your brick and mortars, who you really never ordered from, and they really never depended on that. And sometimes food, certain types of food, does not translate well.
No matter how great your expectation,
you plate that and you put it in something else, drive it around the block, bring it back to me, and I eat both.
No, it's shit.
It's completely changed.
Yeah.
And that's tough, man, because that's not even their fault. And those are the people that, you know, it almost breaks my heart when I hear from them.
Same.
Because they're like, Art, you know, I had a great business that was dine in, and what do I do now? I don't really have a delivery business. So those are the ones that have shut down. I did something for Fox News last week, which was a story they called me on essential businesses that have had to close and why. And that's kind of the reason. Like, they weren't prepared for delivery, you know?
Right.
98% of their business was in brick and mortar dining. And all of a sudden they took that away and said, okay, delivery. And they're like, oh, we're not ready for this.
Yeah. What about you, Diana?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you're going to see, like you said, you're going to see a change in every kind of industry. I see it. I was in apparel before this. I see my friends that are still in apparel. I have friends that are getting married that are freaking out. You know, you are going to see a silver lining to a degree. I think so many people are going to see the option that they can work from home now that they couldn't see before.
Well, like evidently, we all can.
I think that's going to blow people's minds. Like, oh my gosh, like commercial real estate, nobody needs an office anymore. Like, it's crazy. But that's a whole different subject.
No, but that's a great point. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you're going to see so many things that are going to come out of different businesses that realize that, oh, this might actually be a better way to do this, or a more,
more efficient
way, or you know, some things like that. So I do think that the to-go cocktails will probably continue for a while, whether it be develop a little bit further. I know some people, like I said, are struggling with it. I hear it from their mouths that, you know, is it worth them paying for someone to come in and batch the cocktail and do all these things and the labels and the bottles and, you know, all that stuff. I think everybody's trying to figure all that out and trying to make sure that it is beneficial, it is, you know, efficient and things like that. So, but I do think that will probably be one way to continue. We really don't know what's going to happen. I actually, like I said, I had several calls earlier. I've actually had some calls with my team on trying to predict and forecast what our numbers are going to look like in 6 months from now.
Is that sort of what your Zoom calls are? Is that what your meetings are now about? Like everybody
some
had an
agenda, are, yeah.
Right? Everybody had an agenda. We're going to do this week. We're going to do this week. Now it's like all of our meetings are about what the fuck are we going to do right now?
Yeah. I think it's a little bit about what we're going to do now and also how to prepare for what is to come, right? And there's like you were saying earlier, there's really no way to predict what's going to happen. You could have this could be lifted and people go running to the bars because they're so crazy because they're in their house and they haven't seen another human or
I might be that kind of person.
Right?
Yeah. With a little bit of social distancing.
Right? So like you can go on that side. I'm cool. Right. But then there's going to be the people that are still very apprehensive or people that, you know, have been out of work or maybe had pay cuts and they're going to be conservative about the way they spend their money. You know, there's going to be, it could go either way. It could be a combination of both. So it is going to take some time to really navigate and see how people respond. And it's going to be different in all parts of the country, right?
Sure.
I mean,
yes.
New Yorkers are going to be different than people in Texas. Everybody's going to be different.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think in each state, there's a divide as well, right? You have younger individuals.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Maybe feel more comfortable. But then you have immune compromised customers and you have the older generation customers who a lot of them seriously are thinking they're not going to come out for a very long time until there's an actual cure for this.
Right.
Until the medical toolbox that they can say, oh, you have corona? Here's six things we're going to do to make sure that you're okay.
Right.
Which is the same thing we do for every other virus that we've ever had.
Right.
So I think what's going to happen right now is, I think she's 100% correct. Like all the states are going to be different, but then within those states, there's a whole nother level of sections of people who are going to be like super, super, super shy about it and gun shy to say like, whoa, I'm not coming out of my house for at least another 2-3 months. I don't want to get this. I can't get this. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that's where the marketing is going to come in, both from brands who are going to start saying, hey, you're not going out. This is what you do with my brand in your home and enjoy cocktails. And then from the on-premise market, they're going to have to say, this is why it's comfortable to come to our restaurant. And this is what we're going to offer you. And I think technology is going to be huge here, right? Like restaurants that have a lot of technology and less human contact might now be the prime establishment for people to go to for the next 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
When I was preaching, like, I love that stuff, but man, I love that bartender, that human contact. Now it totally might change for 6 to 8 months about that.
I miss my bar. You know, I miss my bars. For me, Jersey, and I'm in LA now, but my Jersey bar was Sharky's. I don't know if you've ever been up there, but it's a great wing spot in Clifton, you know. And what they did, you know, they're because their wings are what they're known for. They're you know, they're doing takeout. They turned their secondary business, right? A lot of bars, first business is the bar. And then the food is secondary, but they took their secondary and now are making it their sort of their first thing. Are you seeing some of that secondary stuff be treated as a first thing in some of the bars to kind of create some income and cash flow?
Yeah, I think everyone hesitant, and I'm sure we can all agree on this call, anyone that was hesitant to Seamless or Grubhub or anything like that was like, damn it, I should have just
fuck,
done
I need
it.
That.
I should have done it. And even if I didn't use it, I would have been set up to transition to that for any reason. Like any more sales or to-goes are more important. So let's push it off. Now, ghost kitchens, right, which is a huge thing, which is restaurants that are saying, hey, our to-go is so amazing that we have to go open up an on-premise, off-premise kitchen from our restaurant and partner with a couple people and like four restaurants, and they make a bunch of restaurant stuff within one off-premise kitchen so that to-go orders aren't coming in and messing up your regular service. Like they were in a good position to survive and thrive.
Yeah. Now I'm going to ask you, Art, a question. You, I've been dying to ask you about this. You were on Bar Rescue.
Correct.
And you did a couple of episodes, and you do the initial, John sends you in and does the tasting to see the, what does he call that? Yeah.
It's called a recon.
Recon, right. I love recon. Yes, you start using that word about things that I'm like, I'm checking the neighbors across the recon. Anyway, okay, so you're on the show. How different is John the shut it down versus John the guy, your friend?
Listen, John has taught me so much in this industry. I mean, when this all went down, I was texting back and forth with him talking about what can we come together and do. And we did a great like interview with John about, you know, things that are going to be happening in our industry. And we're mirroring the same type of voice. We really see what this landscape's going to look like. John is like that. He's all business, man. That man is all business. He is one of the smartest bar science people that I've ever met. I mean, I learned from him like every day. He's one of the smartest
business people I've ever met.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like, I met him at a book signing, and I just said something to him about, oh, well, you know, hey, we take a lot of tips from you in the wedding industry. And he hit me with a few thoughts just at the fucking book signing. I was like, whoa.
What John understands really well is the human nature of like why somebody doesn't do something. Like right. We all have jobs, right? We all have different responsibilities. There is a defined thing why somebody turns and walks away from something they should actually know they should be working on.
Sure.
And it comes down to, if you've read his book and the things he's done, is that people make excuses for themselves.
Yes.
And it makes them feel okay about walking away from that instead of attacking it. And we see that a lot in the restaurant and bar industry. So yeah, I mean, John's absolutely amazing. I mean, like, he texted me once and he was doing a bar rescue and he was like, man, I saw your magazine. He's like, in the office, and it was under a bunch of papers. And he's like, they weren't reading it, obviously, because I'm here, you know? So, yeah. you know, but he truly is, even from a small business standpoint, like, he is amazing. I mean, I've sat with him at lunch and we've talked, and I mean, it just, I've learned so much from him, and that's really where a lot of the trajectory in my career has come from, where, you know, John, you know, it's a funny story. John tells it. Him and I were competitors.
Interesting.
John used to yell at me. Like, I was on a trade show floor. He was telling this story at a fundraiser dinner, that he did not want me on his trade show floor because I had a competing magazine when he worked for a nightclub and bar. And John was like, get this guy out of here. He's got a competing magazine. And he came, like, this guy's like a thorn in my side. You know, get him out of here. And then John, you know, transitioned the Bar Rescue and Nightclub and Bar, that trade show, actually decided they didn't want to do a magazine anymore. They just wanted to do a trade show. So John called me and was like, listen, forget it. Let's be part of the family. Let's all work together. Sure. And from that point, we have been great friends, and I look up to him, and I sponsor that trade show now, nice. Which I wasn't allowed on. And I get to do these like fun projects with John now, from what he does from consulting standpoint and what he does on Bar Rescue. And, you know, it's great. I mean, doing recon is exactly what I love to do, which is sit there quietly, pretend that nobody, you know, that I'm just a regular customer, and I'm watching like mistake after mistake after mistake.
Right. I loved your episode. You did a couple episodes that one year.
Yeah, so the one that's been airing, I was in Portland a couple years ago, and then the one that's been airing has been, because it's kind of a family tie. It was the one in Florida. It was a biker bar.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. Was your experience doing the show good?
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. I mean, I love that John's like, oh, I got a real bad one for you. And I'm like, a biker bar, John? I don't have a tattoo on my body. What are you talking about? I don't look like a guy who's like going to ride a Harley.
I love it. So
I called up this tattoo model that I knew in Florida. And I was like, listen, I need you to, you got to be my girlfriend on TV. Because no one's going to believe I'm walking in on this place.
Anytime you need me to be your boyfriend on TV, I'm done. Especially if it's for a bar rescue. Yeah.
So, but a lot of stuff.
I have a couple tats too, so.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, wow. So we're in.
There we go. Yeah.
So, so that episode, there was so much. Like, literally, they're like, Art, you got so much that we won't even be able to use it in the beginning of the episode. But it was, they didn't even have soda guns on that episode. They were using cans. So basically, a can of Coke would sit there for 15 minutes until somebody ordered another whiskey and Coke, or they had to use it, but it's been opened. So the consistency is less because it's less carbonated. Mm. So it was just that there was like so many disaster points. I mean, one of the bartenders was like smoking behind the bar, like off.
I remember. Yeah.
it was like a, it was a disaster. And I forget what their, they had a specialty drink on that one.
I can't think of the name of it.
Yeah. I think it was called, it was like something, I think it was called a Starfucker.
I think it might have been.
I think it was called the Starfucker. And I asked her, I'm like, oh, so that's like what the bar is known for. And she's like, no, that's what I'm known for. And I was like, well, I don't know what's happening here. Like, this is all not good. This is all not good.
Oh, that's hilarious, man.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, listen, that show helps a lot of people.
Yeah.
I know
yeah,
people think like, oh, it's all made for TV. Both the, over 75%, I got to look at the website. There's actually a website that tracks who's still open. These guys are still open and running that listen to, you know, what John's teaching them and what a lot of the, you know, I do a lot of work, Pete, I know you see on my social media where I do seminars with like Phil Wills and Mia Mastriani.
Love them both. Yeah. They're great on the show. Yeah.
Absolutely awesome. I was just on the phone with Phil a couple hours ago. What they do for the cocktail programs and what John builds for the concepts is, I mean, it's truly amazing. I mean, it's truly amazing. And think of how long that show's been going. I mean, that.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Exactly. No, so the perfect thing to binge, by the way, if you're looking for something to binge, binge Bar Rescue. But I want to ask you, Art, what is, I mean, I know the coronavirus has sort of taken over this answer, but what do you see from your perspective of why bars don't make it? I drive through Jersey and LA and whatnot, and I'll ask you, Diana, as well, but what is it that you see that is the one point where you see that bar keep changing hands 10 times over?
Yeah. People think like certain locations are cursed, and that's like such a bunch of bullshit. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
Here's why it's bullshit.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Because as soon as an owner looks at me and he's like, oh, the rent's too high here. I'm like, well, who the fuck signed the lease? Right. You knew what the rent was. Like right. You put together the wrong business plan for this establishment. And then once you get past that, you can see that, you know, listen, the bars and restaurants that do the worst are owners that think that this world is 40% work and 60% I get to hang out with my buddies and
chat have a drink,
bartenders
right.
And have a drink.
Yeah.
The people that make it in this industry realize
they
that
live
they live it. It's 99.9% work and that 0.01 is the time you can relax in your own bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's when you pay attention. I mean, you're paying attention to inventory. You're watching your bartenders. When you're like not paying attention, people are ordering too much. You're carrying too much inventory. People are over pouring. People are giving away free drinks. People are stealing from you. You're not doing the right marketing. You know, you're not watching outside of your business. And you're not doing good new customer acquisition. And listen, there's a formula, and we talk about it all the time in our industry. And you can go like the super aggressive formula, or you can do a formula like this and watch it, and you can build a business. So you start here, and then you get more aggressive and more aggressive and more aggressive. Some people who've never been in this industry try to start all the way out here, and they don't understand how to put out, which owners have to do, 100 fires per day. That's what happens as an owner. You have 100 fires you have to put out and run a business at the same time. And you know, some people that can't handle that don't fare well in this industry. And I think that's what it comes down to. If I had to put it in one, it's 99.9% work.
Yeah.
Maybe you get a drink.
I don't think that's just bar. You know, I think that's business in general, right? I think that you always see in weddings, I would always see the videographer that was an old school videographer, never updated his equipment, always doing kind of the same shit over and over and over again, and expecting something different for him to find the new modern bride clientele. And I would always be like, no, I think you need to, you know, shift your style a little bit, you know, right. But I think every industry is about putting in the effort and also, you know, adapting to times. Yeah. So I'm going to ask you, you know, you see a lot of this as well, you know?
Yeah. I see it so much in the fact that, the turnover is crazy also within like management. I see a lot, which I'm sure you see as well. Yeah. But also I'll go a new place and I'm like, this place is beautiful. They did a great job with the, you know, say the atmosphere, the whole decor, everything like that. You know, and then
we have another pop in and okay. but go ahead. You can finish your thought. I just want to,
so
that's happening.
Automatically we'll have, you know, I can see, like you say, things that are going to go wrong or going to change, or people aren't involved, or, you know, the communication, there's a lack of communication between the parties that are running this place. And I feel like it goes back to what Art is saying about the fact that they're all kind of there hanging out. There's not one person in charge taking all the, you know, doing the work and putting in the effort and also adapting. Like you said, okay, well, you know what? Maybe this original idea, this didn't work. Okay, so what are we going to do now with the space that we have or the program? How do we adapt it to the neighborhood? I feel like a lot of people maybe don't know their neighborhood that they're in. That's huge in New York, especially. I'm sure it's, you know, in other places as well. But
this is what a pop in. This is a pop in. You know, I just
literally a pop in. But he's got a good question. I do think that adapting people, you know, having to adapt to maybe figuring out, you know, what works and what doesn't as they go, because things change.
I mean, I think what she's saying on staffing, and I'll add to that because she's spot on that, is that some owners and managers become complacent with their current staff.
Yeah.
What's crazy to me is if you have somebody behind the bar or a server who is amazing at everything, right? The upsell, the touching each customer, like just saying a couple words, moving on, letting everybody know that she's paying attention to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's like a 10. But then you know you have a 6 behind there. Mm-hmm. Why are you not either training the 6, and if she doesn't get it, saying it's not a good fit, and you've put in some education to her and it didn't elevate to where your brand needs to be.
Right.
And go out and find the next 10. And maybe it's not the first hire, maybe it's not the second hire, but maybe it's the third hire, you get another 10. Now you got 2 10s behind the bar. Like, yeah. I don't understand why some people become complacent with their staff. You can't. Well,
I think complacency in general is a problem in all businesses, right? Yeah. I think that not even just with the staff. I think just, you know, this is how it operates. This is the fucking way it goes. And you see that so often on even on Bar Rescue. But Chris, I don't know if you're there, but Chris was working at a bar, and I hope he pops back into this frame. But anyway, I guess he has a question.
The placement is perfect. He's got like 2 perfect closets behind him.
I know.
He has a show, a podcast he's starting called Between 2 Doors, which is brilliant.
Okay, this makes sense.
Perfect. Yeah.
I had to like navigate my house, like trying to figure out where there's a good spot.
And I hope he comes back. But anyway, he had a, you know, I'll wait for him to come back to ask his question. But okay, so to both of you. And I don't know if it's Jersey. I guess it's a 2-part question. What is the first spot that you guys are going to when bars open? And you know, because you're both in Jersey, I know you're originally from Philly, so you might have a Philly answer on that. But maybe locally and far away, where are you going and what's the drink that you're going to have when you go out?
I say ladies first, so I defer to the lady on this.
There you go. Okay.
Oh, no, that's not fair. Oh, that is like a loaded question because I have so many favorites. And for different reasons, you know, like I'd go to one place for the people maybe, and I'd go to another place for food or cocktails. This is going to be hard for me. It would be in New York. I would definitely think it would be in the city.
I'm going to employees only.
Oh, so good one.
EO is one of my favorites. Yeah.
I don't know what I'm drinking there, but I'm getting, because hopefully they'll have like a coronavirus cure.
You know? I do love EO. I haven't been there in a while, actually, either. I used to go right for their Manhattans, and I'm not a Manhattan person in general. I love whiskey, everything whiskey, but.
Your answer should really be O'Hare Airport.
right. Wait. Honestly,
we met at Air Airport.
I just want to get back to you know, the community, really. I mean, we just got off a call, like I said earlier, about talking about doing, you know, something where we can do a little, you know, bringing people together to support some accounts once we are able back open, and doing maybe like a little bar crawl with a bunch of people to really get back into doing a group, whether it be all different suppliers, and we pop around and we do like a couple nights of a bar crawl just to really get to support, you know, our accounts while all of us getting together as well. So I don't have one favorite place.
Okay.
I,
well,
you know, but
you shit the bed on that answer. So
I know. if I have more comes to my head, that I'm one pop out.
You fucked up, Diana. You had the ball. You had the ball.
No, I couldn't. I couldn't.
Handed it to you first. You know.
I hope all my buyers out there are happy that I didn't pick a favorite.
Yeah, well, they're all like, what the fuck? Just say one.
I can't pick a favorite child. You know.
It's a little bit different than a favorite child. It's a favorite drinking cocktail. Watch, kidding. Art is going to have no problem with this answer.
I know.
I only have no problem with it because I deferred to her. I thought I was being a gem. I would have taken that one if I knew you were going to be on that one.
Yeah, if you always can have another chance to jump back in here if you feel.
I'm definitely going to go local. There's a bar in Hoboken that a really good friend of mine opened up about 2 years ago. It's called The Pig and the Parrot. It's nice. A high volume bar. Just a really great friend of mine. He broke away from being an amazing, amazing managing partner, went out on his own, put together the Pig and Parrot in Hoboken, crushed it in a space where there was never a line and everyone thought the place, oh, you know, that place is jinxed, you can't do it. 3 months, he already had a line outside, he was killing it. He went down and opened another location.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. So to me, he looked at me and goes, I'm opening another place. I'm like, Mike, you're crazy. You know, I would never say do it this fast. I'm like, but I do love your style, so like go for it. So I would definitely go there just because we've been talking a lot and you know, I would want to support that. And then I'm going to be on a plane. So I'm going to be in Austin. I'll be at Nickel City. I mean, I'll be bouncing around. But I think everyone's got to go local. You got to go to that first spot that's always been the spot for you when you needed it the most. And now they need you the most.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. I think that's
So if that's for me, then it's American Whiskey.
Okay, where's that?
It's actually near Madison Square Garden. It's on 30th between 7th and 8th. So if it's, you know, kind of that always kind of been there for me, it would be the American Whiskey.
Nice. Well, I'm in LA now, but if it was Jersey, it would be Sharky's, Wings, couple brews and whatever they had on tap, you know, because it's just like you said, it's that local home sort of bar. In LA, I have not ventured yet because you can't go to a fucking bar.
You went there like the most perfect time. You get to actually make your list strategically right now.
Oh, fair. That's I love the upside of that. Yes.
You're going to be like shot out of a cannon. You're going to be like, I have these 27 places I got to go to now.
Fuck. That's a great way of looking at things. Yes. Chris's question, I don't know where he went, but his question was, he was, you know, obviously working at a bar and he's in Florida now. And, you know, I guess from the employee standpoint, okay, we talked a lot about bar owners and whatnot. So what is your thoughts on what an employee should be doing in this time frame, looking to earn extra money and whatnot? What can they do? And what can they look forward to almost, I guess, because we want to give everybody sort of like a silver lining. What can they look forward to in terms of things coming back eventually? And I'm gonna remove him from the room now because he didn't.
I mean, I like those. I like the two doors. I like the two
he's
doors,
gone.
But
he's
gotta go.
He's been cut. Yeah. That's his question.
I probably think you have a little bit more on this, but I'm seeing, you know, there's obviously a lot of different things that people are contributing to right now to help out with. You know, with people that are missing out on obviously making money right now, the bartenders, things like that. So anybody that can obviously help with that is great. I think with them is pairing up with brands as much as they can. I know brands are looking to help where we can. You know, I know whether it be a big brand or a small brand, whether it be a cocktail presentation they're doing for them and they're blasting it out on social media, things like that. I mean, that's really where it's such a, it breaks our hearts too, as brands, especially smaller brands like us, where we can't contribute as much as we would want to, you know, because they really, I mean, like you said earlier, when you have a 10 working behind the bar, and I'm not talking visually, I'm talking, you know,
that always helps too, though.
But if you have a 10, you know, it's, there's nothing like it. I mean, that makes the whole experience, right? So all these people, you know, we want to be able to give back as much as we can. So, I mean, just kind of keeping an open voice too within the community, everybody talking to each other, you know, supporting each other, whether it be even just to call someone, right? Because we're all kind of, especially in New York, we had this, you know, on our call today, we're talking about, we're all kind of like in a small space, you know, it's not like we're outside getting like, you know, everybody's really like, you know, this is a time to like even just reach out as a friend, right? And kind of, and help each other out in that way too. So I, like I said, I know Art, you'll probably have a little bit more kind of in depth on that, but more in a personal way, you know, cause I look at them as, you know, friends too, and just kind of just doing that, being there to support them, being there to like help them out. They're having a bad day and things like that, I think is huge.
Yeah. And before Art jumps in here, I want to say that there's a chef in New Jersey. I'm wearing his shirt, Mike Carino. He's been talking about mental illness in the restaurant industry a lot. You know, mental illness right now is a big deal because there's a lot of restaurant workers or bar workers that are dealing with, they're dealing with the shit when they're in it, and now they're not in it. And so there's probably a bigger pile. So I think reaching out, I want to always bring Mike's point up that bringing, you know, reaching out to those employees or those friends or coworkers is always a good thing at this point in time. But Art, I want to, you know, you don't have to go down that road, but
I think those are both really good points. I think pairing with a brand, super important, right? Like that gives them some future, with that brand as well. Whether it's making recipes for them, getting paid for it or anything like that, the partnership on that. I think reaching out to people and just keeping the community tight and talking about how you're doing, because this is a pretty tough time for them. I can tell you bartenders and other individuals that have just started a GoFundMe page and just said, give me money, it's tough. Right. Like there's so many out there, you got to figure out a different way to stand out. Like let your owner start it and put a little money in there and saying, hey, you know, I'm starting something for my staff. I've been a big proponent of saying, if I see an owner start a GoFundMe page and doesn't make the first initial deposit into that, whether it's $50 or $500, I don't care. As long as they start it, don't just dump your problems on everybody else and say, hey, my staff's out of work, donate to them. Like start it off with a little bit of something. But I think, I think the bartenders that have been the most aggressive and really, they've called their owners and said, okay, you know what? The bar's not open. Do you need it repainted? Do you need cleaning done? And they're actually getting paid by the owners to spruce up the place. And that's helping them show that they actually are taking initiative in the establishment and they're part of the business's family. So a lot of individuals have been doing that. And then managers have been just getting completely creative with what they're doing. I mean, we got guys doing game shows on IGTV where, you know, they're having individuals play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And obviously they're not giving away $1 million, but they're doing fun things and they're getting their staff involved and the staff is into it. There was a food and beverage director or manager who actually started to auction off the bartenders for dates. And I was watching it on Instagram and I'm telling you, like, that not one girl got whatever she went for. It all went into a pool and they split it. And I'm talking about people were giving, there was $850, $1,000 for some of these individuals. And basically it was a controlled environment. You would meet that person within the bar when it opens up. So it's controlled. Like you're not going out with somebody you wouldn't know to a separate restaurant. Like dinner and drinks are in that bar and restaurant and you're with your favorite bartender and you got to support them.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very well played move to keep it classy and to also control the environment. And it was both guys and girls. That were going. So I think the bartenders that were the most aggressive during this time to think uniquely in how to survive this time, because we all know we just have to get through it. And then we're eventually going to get back on track, because where the cocktail industry was amazing. I mean, you could have talked to me 5 weeks ago and I was like, oh my God, like this is going to be another great year. And it just didn't get there, but there's a big light at the tunnel.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to ask you some fun ones here. This is a question we ask every industry person that comes onto our show. What is, and this came from Impractical Jokers, but what is the one thing in your industry where you say, Again with this shit. What?
I can go so hard. I'm like, you want to go? I could just go right now.
You go first.
Damn, again with this shit.
For the love of God, when you hand somebody their bill, put the customer copy on top. I'm sorry, put the
merchant copy. I would never even think of that. That's
put the merchant copy on top. Excuse me, reverse. I always get the customer copy on top. I fill it out, and I'm like, fuck. Put aside and fill it out again.
Always, man. I always do that, yeah.
The one thing I always tell people, I'm like, I don't care how it comes out of your POS machine. I don't care.
Just flip down, do it in reverse. It, right?
Yeah. The person's probably engaged talking or something like that. They're making it quick. I mean, if he's a gentleman, he's not showing what the bill is. So he's kind of trying to do it fast because he doesn't want the person to know, try to show how much they're spending.
Exactly.
Like, you're doing it fast to be a gentleman and say, like, listen, it was a great dinner. I'm out. I don't need to show you it was a $400 dinner or a $200 dinner. It doesn't matter. But just put the merchant copy on top. So
it's just simple. It's very simple.
It's so simple. Biggest pet peeve.
Okay.
I'm so happy you asked that. I wish more people would ask that because I always have that in the back of my mind.
I feel like you might have two or three more too, but
I could go for hours.
Yeah, Diana, what you got?
I feel like when I'm on the spot with little stuff like that, I wouldn't think about it until I'm in the moment, but I think the ego.
As soon as I said it, you knew it though.
As soon as I said it, I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I think the egos.
Yeah.
The egos of some people that I see out there, it takes away, like I talked about earlier,
The bar owner ego. Yeah.
Owner, bartender, someone that you are going there to, not be entertained by, but enjoy their company.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
I feel like the hospitality is taken out of it, right? Mm. So, and then you're dealing with, and I'm like, really? Like, you're not, I don't want to be here with you.
Well, because where you're coming from. You know what I mean? Like,
not at all.
Right.
And, being underestimated or whatever, like you said, going into the bar rescue, people don't know who you are. Right. But even just you're there to, it's the whole experience, right? So when you're getting either like a kind of person that's a little off or you're not warm, I guess, is that a good way to say it? Sure. It changes the whole thing for me. So I just get annoyed and I'm like, I don't even feel like dealing with this place anymore.
I agree with that because I think so another thing is a bartender should be able to read what the customer is. So I always teach them.
Man, works also in any industry. By the way, I know you, your bar industry stuff, you guys say a lot of stuff that's great for bars, but it is great for life and in general business. Reading your customer is probably the most important thing you can do.
If she walked into a bar and sat alone at the corner of the bar and I'm the bartender, I should know within four sentences if she's having a horrible day, a shit day, and she does not want to talk to anybody, including me as the bartender, or she's out alone or traveling or does want to have a little conversation, and that's where I'm going to talk to her and I'm going to upsell and keep her in the bar for one more. That is a huge, huge miss by bartenders, because then the bartender says something completely ridiculous like, you should smile.
Yeah, right.
don't push it. You should know what the person is and serve them to what exactly they want to be.
Yeah.
And I've always tried to teach bartenders to – what I call it is I call it a lone wolf. When somebody's sitting alone at the bar, they're a lone wolf. They're just sitting there.
Yeah.
And you figure out whether it's a guy or a girl, whether they want to talk or don't talk, whether they want to be upsold and want to stay for one more because now you've engaged them and they're out to be entertained, or else they just had the worst day of their life. They don't want to talk to anybody. They just want to have a drink and think about that shit day so they can move on from it tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay, next one. Now, I feel like Art's going to have a crazy answer on this.
No, thank God my publicist is not on here. He'd be like, what the hell? Ask him back to say something ridiculous.
I feel like as a person that goes to bars, wild things happen to me just being at a bar. And people always ask me what the craziest thing I saw at a wedding, what's the craziest thing, blah, blah, blah. And I have good answers for that, but that's a different show. What is the craziest thing that's happened to either of you in
that happened to me, I'm definitely not answering that one.
Okay, well, no, but in your world, in the world of the industry that you work in, so it doesn't mean that you did this thing in Vegas, you know, like I'm talking
about. Ain't happening.
I will try to get that personally, but off camera, yeah. But I'm curious in terms of your industry and your career, what is the weirdest, or not weirdest, but the wildest thing you saw at a bar? Maybe doing some help, a recon, or whatever it is. What is the wildest thing that you saw happen, or maybe said to you even?
There've been so many stories. I mean,
it's New York. I'm like, I see crazy stuff every day. Okay. I don't even.
Well, then you should have many plentiful answers. Oh. Yes.
Traveling around and doing what I've done and getting like behind the scenes from owners and operators. I mean, so much has happened. I mean, I would say that probably one over the top thing was I was in Vegas at Omnia and they did a table drop. Which
I knew it was going to be in Vegas, by the way. I just knew. Yeah. I knew it was going to be in Vegas.
So what they did is Tiesto was playing and then he stopped. And this was for my birthday's always around the nightclub and bar show. So I'm always.
What is your birthday? Because I have to put it on my calendar so I can get invited to this fucking party.
Yeah. it's March 24th. So
I'm putting it in my calendar.
I turned 40 years old and it took a pandemic to stop my, my 40th celebration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoever's
in charge of it, please invite me next year.
So the table I was at had a table drop done where he actually switches up his set, and a girl in a light up tutu from about 30 feet above us slowly swings down with a giant bottle of champagne to your table and drops you a bottle of champagne. But the whole, I mean, you're talking about like 4,000 people looking at your table because a girl in a light up tutu and the music totally changed and everyone's like, what's happening? So that was probably one of the most like over the top things that I've seen.
Yeah. Diana, sure. What you got?
I don't have anything on that level, but I think for me every year, the EO repeal day party is always a pretty, it's an industry only, invite only party. And it's always
That's interesting.
A lot
yeah.
of fun.
Yeah. Have you ever seen something so crazy you went home and were like, I can't believe that fucking, I mean, listen, I've been drunk and I have answers to those questions, but I think I feel like we're not answering that question.
All right, so I'll throw another one out there.
Okay.
I know this owner operator is no longer in the country and opening nightclubs elsewhere. So I can't get in trouble for this, but I did take a nightclub tour once.
Come closer. Or sometimes when you pull out, it's okay. Yeah.
Sorry. So a nightclub tour, and he was showing me like the back of the house, and we were like kind of like kicking through doors, and he's like, all right, he's like, go into that door. It's like my favorite room. So I like fling the door open. I run in there, and it's the locker room for all the cocktail waitresses changing. Oh, so I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And he was like, totally got you on this one.
And I was like, okay.
Like, that's horrible. Was my waitress for later going to be in that room? He's like, oh, totally. She's going to hate you. And I'm like, come on, man, that's so messed up.
Brilliant. That is a brilliant practical joke. Yes.
It was pretty crazy. Like, I
that is pretty crazy.
When I saw the girl, I'm like, listen, I'm like, that's not who I am. I wasn't looking for the bathroom. He told me to do it, the owner. He goes, he does it all.
It was a joke. He set you up. So you're in the clear on that one.
Yeah. Same owner that actually had a bedroom built in his nightclub.
Okay, bedroom. Now, yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah.
I've seen crazy stuff, but I think this is kind of expected at like Sleep No More and things like that. You know what I mean? Or like, I know people talk about the box a lot, things that go down in places like that. So
yeah.
I had some good nights in the box.
Oh boy. Wow.
So I think that's kind of just to come, it's expected of those places, but
yeah. All right. I'm going to let you guys answer this question. What I want you to talk to your industry.
Wait,
friend.
Whoa. Where's your crazy time?
Yeah.
Whoa. Well, I'm going to let you ask all the other questions. But like, what is
I met a girl at O'Hare Airport once. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, that night must have got crazy.
No. We didn't. It was just we just texted and said, hey, we should hang out one time. And we hung out at a Met game, I think, once.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Craziest bar story. I'm sure somebody's out there thinking they have the answer. I'm going to skip it. I'm going to skip mine.
I'm going to skip it. When we get to this, I have questions for you, and I'm going to turn this around on you.
Oh, boy. Okay. To your industry folks that are watching this today, that are struggling in their bars or with their employees, or because listen, the reality of this is these owners, the last thing they ever want to do is to lay off their employees. They work so hard to provide for their employees and for their customers, so they're being put in a position that they're not used to, right? What would you say to them about the next few months, the next year? Things are going to get better, yes, but talk to me a little bit specifically about what's going to get better and how it can get better. I'm going to go with Diana first and let Art have kind of the last word on that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, it's not just the bartenders, it's not the bar owners, it's also the brands, you know what I mean? Like I said too, like we're all in the same boat. You know, there was, you know, when this all started, it was like working for a small brand. Am I going to have a job? Are we going to be able to get through this? You know, we're not to the point yet where we are the, let's say you made Bombay reference earlier, you know, we're not that, you know, Bacardi of the world or that. So it's all of us. We're all in the same boat together. And I think, you know, we all know that there's got to be a light at the end of the tunnel, right? So we have to focus on that. But I think in the meantime, going back to what I said is, you know, really just all being there for each other, keeping the camaraderie that we all love about the industry alive, constantly, you know, keeping in touch with people, sharing ideas. Like this is a time for everybody to not be in competition, right? To share your ideas, to take the initiative to, you know, maybe these ideas that you've had for a long time, this is the time. This is the time to, you know, really have all the time every day to kind of indulge in those projects. Take, you know, even if it's a bartender that's been wanting to start, you know, this project specifically, or go to the brand side or learn more about this, you know, take more educational stuff about, you know, the WSETs or, you know, whatever it may be that you really want to take this time to better yourself so that when this is over, you are like out the door, like you are running and you're at full capacity. So I think it's taking the time individually. I know for myself, like I'm working on, you know, myself, keeping myself healthy, working on different projects that I've been putting off on my own, working with my company to develop other things that we've been kind of putting back in the back, you know, on the back burners for a little while and really focusing our time on that and the research on that, while making sure, like I said earlier, reaching out to all my friends in the bar industry, constantly talking to them, you know, supporting somebody, because like when I might be down one day, they might be up and vice versa. You know, everybody's going to have these kind of ebbs and flows in their emotional roller coaster, let's say, what is going on with this. Nobody's going to be up all the time, you know? So just staying positive throughout it and continuing to work on yourself and have like little mini goals throughout it, because you'll be ready to go when this is over.
I'm gonna let Art jump in there. But I do need to say that this, you just said the phrase emotional roller coaster, right? I do feel that this virus and being stuck inside your house has created, for no matter whoever's watching this, an emotional roller coaster, right? You know, especially for the group of us, and I know Diana, you're the same, that we were talking earlier, that we're social butterflies and we like to get out and we like to be around, we like to set up this meeting while we're setting up another meeting. You know what I mean? So it's challenging for the creative types. And I would just say that it's a good, for creative types, it's a good time to find new creations. It's a good time to dip into things that you, like for example, this live at night show. Right? This is not something that I have ever done. I don't know anything about going live on Facebook, but I became sort of like, hey, it's available. The Zoom thing was kind of fun one night. And I was like, I'm just going to do this every night until this fucking thing is over with. And then we'll see what happens with it. But I've had so much fun doing it. So I've dipped myself into some other facet that's always been in my world, right? That I'm playing with. So even for the bartenders or the employees that are out of it, obviously they're all very creative, right? And they're kind of stuck in their wheelhouse, right? Everybody gets stuck in their wheelhouse, but this is an opportunity to find little places outside of your wheelhouse that you could be successful in, and kind of grow from it. That would be my advice.
Like step outside your box,
zone and be creative in a different way. Because there's so much opportunity and so much time now to find those things, like do it, you know. And Art, I'm going to let you kind of hit that. And then I will tell you my favorite bar drunk story. I had a Diana Boyle moment.
I've had a couple happy hours today, I told you guys.
I'm in a happy hour right now. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first drink I had all night. So after this is all over, you guys are staying on for at least one more drink with me.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But
I've been drinking nonstop since this whole pandemic happened.
So I think for the bartenders out there right now, and for like food and beverage directors, like everyone was saying, this is your time to elevate yourself. The owner operator is going to figure out who their core staff is through this. They're going to watch how you react, how you're going to say, what else can I do for the business? Not only yourself. And this is their time to say, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm kind of lower on the totem pole because I'm new to the business as a bartender, but this is my time from when we come out of this to get a better position. So I might be able to go in and do inventory once in a while, depending on what state you're at. If you can't do that, maybe you're talking and training yourself in order to elevate yourself. I mean, the modern day bartender now, I mean, you could Google how to do a correct shake or a Japanese hard shake, and you could learn it now. There wasn't that type of stuff 10 years ago.
Right.
So you can elevate yourself if you take the initiative and then show your superiors. You can get a better position to make up for this time if you just better yourself and better your craft.
Right. And all those programs are still doing online options too. Like I said, you know, like they're still there.
I will get on a phone. I donated consulting hours during this, and there are multiple hours a day I get on the phone with owners, managers, bartenders, whoever it is that just want to say, I have questions. I haven't been able to make it to one of your seminars. Like, can I talk to you? And I'm on the phone, and they're like sponges right now. They all understand that this is their time, that they're not working, and it stinks.
Yeah.
But they can come out and be a better bartender. They can be a better, you know, they can elevate themselves. Hey, listen, not every bartender wants to stay a bartender. Some of them want to be a food and beverage director and owner themselves. This is the time to learn what you should be doing, because it's like, it's hard in our everyday life, right? We all get kind of trapped. You show up to work, maybe you don't learn how to do a different type of shake or learn how to do directional freezing for ice and how to make better ice. But this is the time to do it and elevate yourself. So that's the light at the end of the tunnel, I think, for them, is that they can come out of this better. And I think that's going to be, as an industry whole, I think owner operators that get through this, I mean, across the board, there's going to be a thinning of the herd, right? There's going to be restaurants that, as this keeps going, will not open no matter
what.
There will be.
It's scary, because I think even some of the big top names are not coming back.
Some of them are going to just have a tough time. So this is your time, right, to step out and do something. So bartenders within an establishment are going to thin. So hang in there. Owner operators that just get through this are going to say, oh my God, that guy Art Sutley, or whoever else they saw on stage that says have 3 months of capital if no cash was coming in, was right, because this actually can happen.
Yeah.
You know, nobody looks at this happening. Everybody looks at, oh, if I get hit with a hurricane, like, I have insurance for that. Like, there are insurances, but a lot of them exempt a situation like this.
Right.
Yeah.
So a closure of business is not defined as something as a pandemic. So you need to have this money on hand. So I think we come out of this better for the individuals that can pull through. And I hope to God as many can as possible, because I hate to hear anybody closing. I mean, it's just, that's heartbreaking. Especially some places that I worked with before this, and this, they're started implementing the stuff I taught them, and then all of a sudden it was a hard stop. And I don't know if they're going to be able to pull through this. They didn't have enough time to implement all of what we tried to teach them.
Yeah. I will say this too, for any person that's watching that I think that is sort of on that brink of, they want to go from employee to employer, this is your opportunity to make that new business happen. This is your opportunity to create that dream and to go for something bigger than you, right? I feel like there is a lot of people that are, that, particularly employees, that have gotten very used to the situation. But what we're learning is that we can all work from home. The situation's never guaranteed, right? A pandemic could end your situation. So create something for you. Now, I will tell you guys my craziest story. It's not that crazy, but it's funny. I was at a convention in Phoenix, a photography convention. This is before Uber, Lyft, and all these great apps that came to be. And I was with a photographer, and we were bombed because we were just drinking at the hotel bar, right? Which is always a great story. You guys are both in the industry. You know, we got drunk at our hotel bar. I mean, isn't that the best place to get drunk, at a hotel bar? So we were like, we need to get a steak. So we were so excited to go get a steak. We go to the outside of the hotel, and we call the valet, and we say, get us a cab, because we need to get the fuck out of here. We're going to Capitol Grill. Car pulls up. We get in the car. When we look at the car, we're kind of like, fuck, what the fuck? This is an awful cab. We are in a pickup for someone that's just fucking dropping their car off at the valet. We are not in an Uber. There's no such thing. We're not in a cab. We're not in anything. We're just in some people's fucking car.
They're not driving, right? Like, there's nobody in there. In the back seat. Yep.
No, the valet guy gets in, and we're like, okay, take us to fucking Capitol Grill. And he's like, nah, go. Right. You know, and it's,
he's like, I'm going to park you right over here.
This is somebody's car. And we get out of the car, and of course, the older couple, they're like in their 90s, right? Exactly what you would imagine. Yeah. Staring at the two assholes that got in the fucking valet car and not an Uber car.
Judging so hard. You know, they judge you guys so hard. They're like,
totally, man.
These people are going to be running the world one day.
I hope so. Anyway, listen, so we're going to end the chat now. I think, Art, I want to do so much more with you. I feel like we could do what cocktails we could be making. Diane, I feel like we can do more inspirational stuff, and even just how we're going to use your brand and whatnot and stuff. So I definitely want to go down this road. But what I've been doing, at the end of every episode is gratitude, right? So I want to give you guys the opportunity to give somebody that's been a mentor to both of you the opportunity to say something kind about somebody who did something for you, maybe just even in this pandemic. It could be someone that did something for your careers. And then I'm going to say something nice about both of you. Then I'm going to end the live feed, and we're going to have a drink and just hang out together. So to Diana, someone that maybe you want to shout out. Yeah.
I think someone that's kind of always been someone that I've looked up to in the business is Alan Katz.
Okay.
I don't know how familiar you are. He owns a distillery in Brooklyn, New York Distilling. It also has a bar inside. He also works for Southern Wine and Spirits as their, I want to say, corporate mixologist. I don't know if you're listening, Alan, I'm sorry about your title, but I'm not 100% sure exactly what his title is.
Fucking freaking out. Yeah.
But,
get it right.
Even before I was with Heaven Hill, he's a wonderful person in general. He's brilliant. He's a family man. He is always willing to help, to give someone a piece of their knowledge. And I don't know how he does all that he does and still remains so calm. He's always feels like he has it all together. And like I said, he's a business owner. He has a full-time job. He has small children, an amazing wife who's also in the business as well. And he kind of does it all. And he's always willing to help someone. He never is like too busy or doesn't have enough time. And he's just got all the knowledge in my mind. So he's always been wonderful.
Nice. Okay. So for Diana, what I'm going to say to you, I know we met in this bar at the O'Hara, but I feel like some people are supposed to be in each other's lives for specific reasons. So yeah, I feel like, I don't know what that is, but I feel like we have a really good friendship and chemistry, and I definitely love hanging out and talking with you and getting to see all the awesome things you're doing. I love your dog. Your boyfriend seems very cool.
And the dog keeps on creeping, by the way. He's like right there. His little hangy.
I love it. I think you're an amazing person, and I'm so happy that I got to run into you in that particular moment. I think you're going to do amazing things in this industry, and you're at the beginning of an amazing career.
Just getting started, right?
And I just introduced you to Art, so he's going to he's going to help you along your way. So, Art, go ahead.
For sure. So I'm going to give a shout out to James Monahan from Monahan PR. Not only the guy that handles like all the stuff I get to do in the news, but a really good friend. And we became friends before he became, you know, managing like, hey, you know, you should be commenting on the Wall Street Journal, or you should be on Fox Business and all this great stuff. I was a young man starting a magazine, and he was one of the first people I met. He was representing Martin Miller's Gin at the time as their PR guy. And we just got along really well. And you know, he would say to me, he said, hey, listen, your magazine's growing. You're going to grow in the industry. You're going to start being in the press. And I looked at him like, you're insane. Like, I'm a little magazine read by, at that time, probably only 15,000 bar owner operators. And he coached me and kind of showed me how that could come to fruition and kind of gave me that path. And I will be the first one to admit it. First phone call I ever got for a major press outlet was the Wall Street Journal to call and comment. And I completely shit the interview. Like, horrible. Like, I got nervous. He was like, that's not who you are. Like, he's on the other line texting me being like, what is this? This is not who you are. And I got off the phone. I'm like, James, there's no way I'm going to make it in that article. My first big shot, I didn't. And of course, I didn't make it. And, you know, he was right behind me and said, okay, I don't know what you did on that. You were definitely sitting down, not standing up, not being you and being, you know, enthusiastic about it. And he really coached me. And I mean, I look back at what I get to do, have a voice for this industry and help people and be able to do it, not through my magazine, but through like other outlets. And to me, that was unfathomable at age 27, when I started this magazine, to even think that could be there. And he's the one who's not only been my best friend through this, but also my mentor and the one doing it. So I want to give him a shout out because he took a chance on like a really young, green publisher coming into the hospitality industry. And, you know, we're best friends now. And last year I got chosen to speak at a really large restaurant show, largest show in Italy. And, you know, he came out and, you know, we looked at each other and we're like, wow, like, I can't believe it's come to this point. So I owe him a lot because that's really bolstered my career and me as a person in thinking that I really can do all this stuff.
That's awesome, man. So for Art, I would like to say that, man, I love getting to know you, and I love this story about how we met but didn't meet, you know, through this porn that's not really a porn. I'm just a wedding videographer.
Yeah, I don't know if she was an
old. No, she didn't get it. So she's like, fuck, I got to listen to the beginning of this episode.
We'll explain that later.
Yeah, you'll rewatch that. There's really not a porn involved in it. But no, man, I just love hanging out and talking with you and getting to know you through that trip. And I think you're an amazing person in this industry.
Thank you.
And I think we're going to make something really great together one day. I don't know what that is yet. Maybe it's just this podcast, but maybe it's something much bigger than we're expecting. So I'm just so happy to have gotten to know you and whatnot. And both of you guys, thank you for popping in. And Diane, I think you had some really great insight. And Art, you're an expert in your field. And I hope that we get to do more with you, because I feel like there's so much more to be said about this crisis, the industry. Yeah. And as time goes by, I think there's even more kind of, I think there's going to be more guidance needed.
Sure.
You know,
it's gonna change every day.
We're in a place right now where we're talking speculatively, but once you get into 2 months from now, there's going to be a lot of bar owners and bartenders that are like, fuck, what do I do now?
Correct.
Right. So I think this is always going to be a constant need of information.
Well,
so.
I can't thank you enough for having me on and introducing me to other people with brands. Yeah. I mean, this is the stuff I love. And this is what I feel like this has changed us from doing, right? We're not out there at liquor shows and meeting people. We're kind of all trapped in our little units. Right. And it's things like this that kind of bring everybody together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you to you both.
So I'm going to end the live stream, and then we're all going to have a shot of whatever we're drinking, and we're going to hang out and talk a little bit more. Okay. Thanks everybody for watching Live at Night. Tomorrow, big night. The producers of Beverly Hills 90210 are going to answer your questions. So don't miss it. Okay.